Welcome to Feasting on Design. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. This week on the podcast, I'm chatting with Bill Kenny, CEO of Focus Lab. We chat about how Focus Lab has evolved into a branding firm and what that means, the importance of communication at every stage of a project. We do a deep dive on branding and so much more. Thank you to Hover for sponsoring this episode of Feasting on Design. Hover knows that you have incredible ideas waiting to come to life, and you need hamburgers in the dot news to make a name for yourself. Grab this domain and many more over at hover.com/feastingondesign for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Make a name for yourself with Hover. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/feastingondesign. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Feasting on Design patron, you'll get access to exciting Feasting on Design news before anyone else, plus stickers and t-shirts. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/feastingondesign. Bill, thanks for joining me and welcome back.
Yeah, excited to be here. It's funny, I was just last night I was checking. Last time we spoke was December 2016. 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Almost on the nose.
Oh, wow. That's, wow. Can't believe it's been that long.
I know. Here we are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this year alone feels like it's been 5 years, so.
True. So maybe it's like 8 years since we last talked. Maybe it's
yeah,
like
exactly. So let's dive right into things. And, you know, you reached out, we were looking to talk to more people about branding. So let's dive in and, where to start? Cause branding is such a big topic.
Right. There lies the problem.
You know, how did you get started learning about branding as a whole versus just, I think what we were taught in school and stuff were branding's just a logo.
That's right. Yeah. You're spot on of the problem, basically, which that problem permeates. And I think it's our job as a brand agency to try to like break that down. And I think people in our industry, that's easier to have a conversation around. They kind of understand, oh, we get it, it's not a logo. But man, on a client side, even when they know it, even when they are smart enough to know that is true, when you are in the weeds on a project, it is so easy to lose that focus. So we'll get into all that, but let's go back to the, like, how does this whole thing start? When pre-Focus Lab, so when I was in school and I was an art major, which was my easy path to, I can get a degree and I can do something I like and it won't be that hard. Thank God that actually turned out to be fruitful. But that was kind of the spawn of being an art major for me. So what I realized in those design classes, like you're talking about when they're starting to, you know, where you're doing brand design or maybe the courses at that point were even called logo design, to be fair, maybe to some of those professors. But I realized I really enjoyed that. It was really exciting for me, even more than like, you know, some people were drawn to web. Some people were drawn more to the actual arts, painting and sculpture and that type of stuff. And I just really loved kind of that niche of I can make a logo and it's kind of like a company. And now that I'm talking about it, maybe that scratched my kind of like entrepreneur itch. It was kind of like giving a business a face. And maybe I always was drawn to this idea of a business. Fast forward into Focus Lab. Even the spawning of Focus Lab was still very organic. It wasn't like we're going to grow a brand agency.
Sure.
Specifically, we weren't even targeted in that way yet. It was purely, we do design and people need design and we like to do design and we also do development. And that's why I need Eric. And, you know, we were the perfect yin and yang, designer, developer meet. They get business married and they go on to do great things. And over that time, now getting to the point, over that time is when we realized we're starting to use this word branding. We're selling branding as a service, but are we actually doing branding or are we still just doing visual identity? Are we still just making logos? So now 10 years in, we've got a broader picture, a bigger understanding of what branding actually is. and now working to really bake those things into our core service and teaching and preaching along the line of a project to say, hey, don't, your logo doesn't need to say all those things. Hey, you know, all these things that we need to talk about to the clients. And we are very clear to say that that is part of our value prop. That is part of the value that you're getting when you hire Focus Lab. It is not just come in, we're going to make a logo and kind of send you off. We're going to say, no, we're going to teach and preach all these things along the way. You're going to learn so much, and we're going to keep you on track on this bigger picture. So that was a long answer, but we can break down any of those elements.
Yeah. So how do you look at branding? Like, I mean, what for you, what is its definition?
Oh yeah. So, you know, I can do the really fancy answer, which sounds stupid. And then maybe we'll get a bit more technical.
Sure.
But ultimately brand, I've started to lean into this, brand is simply a feeling, right? Mm-hmm. It's just as simple as that. Like, it could just be that sentence. Brand is a feeling, period. Because that feeling, you get that feeling from all the elements, the experiences, the smells, the sights, the sounds, all that stuff that you get from an organization as its kind of external exposure, the stuff it puts in front of you, it creates a feeling inside of you. So if I tell you the word Apple or show you an Apple product, it spawns a feeling inside of you, much like Nike does, or even Starbucks for a loyal Starbucks coffee drinker, right? It's like, but to do all this. So when you say what is brand, that's kind of the essence of the emotion that you feel maybe on the customer consumer side, but like, what is it? What are all those ingredients? That's where we want to fill that gap and work with the customer to actually fix those ingredients. So starting at the beginning, core purpose and vision and mission, I think that is often overlooked. So we want to make sure that we're building a big part of that into our offering too, just to say, okay, organization, you came to us because you recognize maybe your visual identity is broken and your communications work is broken and all that makes it to your website and now your website is broken. But let's go a step before all of that work. Let's talk about, like, what are you really working towards? Have you been able to distill your mission and vision for yourselves within the organization? Does your team, does your entire organization culture, are they running towards the same kind of North Star, or is this really this brand effort more in line with a marketing effort, if you will? So you kind of have to like split those hairs and see. So again, without going long, if you just want to distill it down to what are the simplest, easy to understand. So visual identity is obviously a core offering of what we do within brand. So how does it look, more than just the logo? Colors, typography, illustrations, patterns, iconography, photography, whatever visual expression comes out of that. For every brand, it's different.
That whole system that you build, yeah.
That's right. The whole larger system. And I think that's the easiest starting point for everyone to say, like, oh, okay, that makes sense to me. Quickly behind that comes the communications work. Mm-hmm. So just as important as how a brand looks, equally important as how it sounds, how it speaks. I think for a long time, both we didn't know how important that was, and we weren't ready to be that organization yet. We are ready to be that organization now. So we have just about as many writers and strategy team members as we do designers. We're leveling the skills.
Oh, really?
Because we know how important that is. And again, because we want to be that type of agency, not just glued into the visuals. So you've got how it looks, how it sounds. Something I skipped, which is really the preemptive to all of this, which is the strategy.
Yeah.
We don't just go in and make pretty things and nice sentences, right? There has to be purpose. It has to be rooted in some type of strategy. Mm-hmm. So there's a big strategy lift at the front of that. And then where does it go from there? So you've got the look and the sound in the speaking sense, sound in a, not a, does it have an actual sound? Because that is also a brand expression.
It is, yes.
We don't typically work with clients that need that. We've had one client that needed that. You know, there's also like, well, there's the experiential side of brand too. We don't, what's the right way to say this? We work with a lot of B2B tech. And what I mean by that is, if we worked with a Starbucks per se, there's an experience that happens when you walk into a store, an arrangement of the store and how the store smells and blah, blah, blah. We don't have that type of clientele either. So there is kind of a limitation, I suppose, to what we can offer, get into brand. And then on the backside of that is obviously web. That's going to be the biggest expression for our clients. It's going to be website. And then after that, the final service, if you will, if I'm going through our services, is going to be how we support a client after the project is over. We had a big realization of like, wow, we do all this work. It's a lot to put on the client. And then they have to figure out how do we facilitate and like make all of these things come true. Now we have all these assets, but it'd be like someone showing up to your house and you're like, hey, my house is kind of old and run down. I need a new house. And we're like, great. We'll like give you the plans. We'll deliver all the wood to your house and we'll build most of it. And then we'll give you the guidelines to finish building the rest of it. You know, you might not be able to execute it as good as we could. So we stay on and help, you know, push it into marketing materials and all those other things.
Gotcha. I find that interesting because, you know, my wife and I launched our business. It's been a year now. And going into it, I come from a marketing design background. So what I wanted to do was focus on brand because I'm not like my background, since I am a marketing designer, is fairly well-rounded, but I'm not like an expert in anything. Like I never had a single focus on like motion or on product design or anything like that. I was doing all of these holistic things. So when we were thinking of how to start our business, we didn't want to call ourselves an ad agency because I don't like that term. It feels dated and it feels so specific. So we've decided to, you know, call ourselves a brand strategy firm. And that's what we do now is we, you know, we start with the discovery phase and then we move into a strategy phase and then comes the design. And then the last piece of it is implementation. And it's taking all of those things and creating this holistic experience to create a brand. And it's, you know, which is exactly what you've just described. It's not just a logo and it's not just a website and it's not just, you know, it's not just the writing and things like that. And I mean, we're small and young, so there's certainly times where we will do just that sort of thing.
Understood.
And I'm sure you guys have projects where, you know, it's paying well enough where it's like, yeah, we can do just that.
That's I mean, there's a, who are we to say that you literally have to do every single step of what we do on any given project. I think, you know, what is most important to us is we are serving our customers. And whether that's they don't have the time, they don't have the budget, et cetera, like it doesn't mean that they can't still extract value from some of the things that we do. Exactly. So we just do our best to say like, okay, we can help you in this way. It would be different if they were saying, we don't believe in brand at all. We just need you to come in and like, you know, duct tape some things together. We would certainly avoid that type of project. But if they say like, listen, we actually believe in the value of everything you do. We're just going to bite off this little chunk right now. Great. Let's see if we can align on that thing and we can help you with that. As long as we can help, we're up for it. And as long as it doesn't break, you know, our values and what we believe is true with the service we offer, then, you know, we're willing to help.
Yeah, that's the same way we approach it. The only step that we don't view as an optional thing is strategy. And, you know, we certainly, I mean, we customize our strategy for everybody. It's not like it's, you know, we've got this cookie cutter process. I have formulaic things that I have in place that make it easier, but everything is customized for each individual client. And that's the only one that we're like, that's non-negotiable, because without that, you know, if you come back to us, you know, down the line and you need, you know, if you need a logo to go with that website, we want to be able to match them up and have that speak to the whole process and have everything be uniform and have you guys have a consistent voice and feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I would absolutely agree with that. We are very careful to not say these are the 7 things we can do for you and it's a la carte and like pick what you want. Like we're very protective of our flow and of our work to say, these are the 4 things that you cannot break down into micro pieces and like buy out or in the, not buy some of it, but some of the bigger components. So I think maybe visual identity to communications is probably a better example to say. Mm-hmm. We're not ready to redo all of our writing right now, but we are ready to go through the whole process, strategy, the discovery phase, and the visual identity. And then that will take us to the first finish line. You know, we would never take out strategy. And I would say to a point, maybe in 5 years from now, we won't even take out communications, right? I think we will get to a point, and not to say that we will be stuffy, but we'll be so dedicated to our outputs and so convicted in what each of them mean to say, okay, well, if you can't do the whole flow, that's fine. We don't have a problem with that. But these are the types of projects that we want to work on. The full flow, best absolute outcome at the end. We're still going to work with great people, though, right? We're still going to bend in the ways that we need to bend.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I think the key for me of how I've come to understand it is, and it took me a long time to come to this understanding, is everything we do is communications. Like that's the backbone of everything we do is communicating. No matter what. So really that's the most important part of the brand is it all has to communicate in some way or another, whether it's a visual component or the writing component or, you know, an interactive component, it all has to communicate. So yeah. So cutting that part out makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. I think you nailed it. Everything is communicating. So then the question becomes what then is it communicating and what do you want it to communicate?
Right? So yes.
That's where we're coming in to solve. Say like, okay, right now it's communicating maybe all over the place. Visuals are communicating this, written words communicating that, et cetera.
Yeah. So how, walk me through kind of, and I just said we customize everything for our clients and I'm sure you customize everything for your clients, but your overall process of, when a client approaches you and let's just say that they need everything, how do you approach them and how do you work with them to educate them on the process?
Yeah, I'm going to do my best. I tend to speak long. So please interrupt me if I'm really long on the subject, because, you know, this whole process can be very long. And I'm going to start us even further back than assigned project. I'm going to speak into the sales process because I think that's an important part of the actual process and the formula. So in our team, we have one of our partners, Will Strawn, who leads the growth team. And Janina, she works very closely with him, and they are basically the front lines of the sales process. And what's important to know is not the sales portion. I want to kind of like remove that word and what that means, what it communicates, and get into the what they're trying to do when they're speaking with new potential customers. They are already kind of like in a pre-discovery phase. What do you need? Why do you need it? Do we agree with that? Right? They're already as non-production people, as non kind of craft experts in a design way or a communications way, they are knowledgeable enough to ask really great questions and to kind of like push back maybe on some of the asks that the client's asking for.
So they can act as kind of a gatekeeper from the get-go.
Yeah. So it is not just the like, keep the crazies out. And I hate to say that, right? Like, you know,
but we've all had them.
more importantly, it is, does that potential partner have a crystal clear vision on what branding actually is, or is there a gap there that the sales team can fill to say like, oh, you're trying to solve for that problem with a logo. let us kind of teach you more here and open your eyes to the logo's not going to solve that, but these four things in combination will solve that. That I just dumbed it down to like a fourth grade level, but they are doing a good bit of that, right? So opening the client's eyes to like, hey, there's actually this other way that we could tackle that challenge you're talking about. And these are the ways that we could do it. So there's a lot of learning in discovery that happens even in the sales process. Then before that scope goes out, it's reviewed by the team, even designer, writer, director level people on the team to come up with the perfect scope for that client. The point there being that they are pretty much all custom. Having said that, they're custom within a lane, right? They're not like wildly customers like, oh my God, we've never done this before. We're adding services we've never even thought about. It's, you know, it's still within our realm and it's still within a lane, but it is custom to the needs of that client. So we get out of the sales process. That's the first, are we doing the right thing for what they need, et cetera, which is really important, right? You're not just signing people up because they say they need a thing and then only realizing, oh, you needed this other thing halfway through their project.
Sure.
So now you get more down to the tangible aspects of the project, which I think most of your listeners will relate to, is like, okay, now we're in the strategy phase. How long are we in the strategy phase? What types of questions are we asking in the strategy phase? And I guess I won't try to go into every detail of that. I'm also not a strategy team member, so that's not going to be my strength, other than recognizing it's really important to the project and we need to maintain that at Focus Lab. So you've got the strategy portion that goes for a series of weeks. A lot of client side homework, a lot of back and forth, really trying to get down to the crux of who are they serving? Why are they serving them? Why is it important? How are they different? The personas of the customers. What we don't do, which is probably important to say, is we don't go out and do a ton of polling, product research. Hey, what's wrong with this thing? If we asked 100 people, you know, like,
you're not doing focus groups. This person?
And we don't do any of that. And that's another thing I won't get lost in kind of trying to say why we don't do it. But ultimately, like, it's not what we do. And we don't feel like that is going to return a huge amount of value for the service that we offer. So,
I mean, that's strategy by committee to me.
It's the whole, like, it's the Henry Ford quote that everybody uses, right? If you asked them what they wanted, you know, what is it? They would have said more horses So we don't get into that side of it. We feel like we can extract a ton of value from our partners themselves, what they know to be broken and need to be fixed, where they're going. They know their vision better than any customer out there. They might be doing a huge pivot. Therefore, that polling would be totally irrelevant. You get all that information, and that now is going to feed every other channel that comes out of that. So you can go into design phase. You can go into the written word communications phase, brand writing. You can start to run those in parallel, if you will, trying to make sure everything aligns back to the strategy. We go through that for weeks and weeks and weeks. There's a lot of back and forth. I don't know how nitty gritty you want me to get into on the, like, how often do you ship your work and like, how do you ship it? I'll just say that we ship weekly, which might sound fast to a lot of people. It might sound slow. I don't know. I've not worked in other agencies, but that's what we found over the past 10 years to be really effective for us, is these weekly sprints. We ship that work. We meet with the client at the beginning of the next week. We talk about the work, pros and cons, what you like, what you didn't like. It's not just about what they like and they don't like, but getting that feedback, going back to work, shipping again on the Friday. And we do that cycle over and over and over and over again. The main takeaway there is we've realized it is, what's the right way to say this? I don't know if dangerous is the right way to say this, but it is risky. It's probably a better word. It is risky to wait for a long series of weeks, say go dark for 4 weeks, work on a thing that you think is magical, put it in front of the client 4 weeks later, only to find out that you've either
that they hate it,
completely misheard them, gone way off track, or they hate it for their own personal biases, whatever the reasons might be. That's a long time and a lot of effort potentially going in the wrong direction. The weekly touch point for us allows us to have exactly that, a touch point with the client, insight from the client. It's also a lot more comforting to the client. Let's be honest. Like, we try to be really empathetic to the client side in our process. Sitting around for 4 weeks, just like nervously waiting for what you're going to get from a service provider, that's a long time.
Yeah, that's scary. Did they just take our money and run away?
Mm-hmm. Right. So even in the week, so strategy is an example of this. Strategy in first week of design actually breaks that cadence a little bit. We get 2 weeks of dedicated time. It allows us mm-hmm. to be a little bit more heads down and focused. But even at that 1 week check mark, we send a message over and say, hey, mm-hmm. just so you know, we're working on this. We've gotten really far. We're really excited about it. If you have any questions, hit us up. There still has to be a touch point because you never want that feeling mm-hmm. on the client side. Like, I think they're working hard, but I can't see them and I never hear from them, but it'll probably be all right. We never want that.
Yeah, feeling. I'm the same way. I may not have anything to show you, but I can at least email you to let you know I'm still alive.
That's right. Yeah. So all those touch points are really important. So back to process. So yeah, you go through all those stages. Then you get to the style guide phase, right? So now you're like mm-hmm. getting close to the finish line, what assets need to be created, style guides for both visual and the written communications work. That ships over. And then we actually roll into that brand support mm-hmm. part of the process, which is basically like there's the project and then there's post-project. We stay on for a smaller capacity, more agile, and just handle mm-hmm. whatever they need. What do you need? Billboards? You need trade show booths, you need car wraps. Maybe you don't need any of that. Maybe you need this like one page web design skin that doesn't need this huge scope of work and giant lifts, you know, that type of work.
I'm assuming when you get to that point, you're making recommendations to them on what they need as well, because they may not be aware of what all they need.
Interesting. Our strong recommendations usually come during the project. Hey, do not right. do that. Hey, you do not want to do this or do that. We understand you like this thing, but we would suggest you do this. When it gets to the back end of the project, our clientele at this point is large enough to really understand what they do need, at least mm-hmm. at least out of the gate. Say like a Marketo, for example, a 2,000 mm-hmm. plus member team. They know they've got conferences on the books for the next 6 months. They know they've got all these ebooks because they need to pump out all this other content. They've got a good idea of some of the stuff that they need. They're not just like, what do we sure. do with this? We need some, they might want our recommendations on like cool swag or yeah. kind of like outside of the box thinking creations.
Yeah.
But they've also got a long list of the real, like in the trench, boots on the ground type of stuff that they need done.
Right. So I guess we approach it where we're making recommendations of what you need in the strategy phase of things. And there may be things that in the process of actual creating that we come across that we hadn't thought of mm-hmm. That we'll make a recommendation, but we never, very rarely is it a surprise. It's usually, hey, we think we're going to discover this when we get into it. We're not 100% sure, but we want you to be aware that, you know, working on a website, say, mm-hmm. you know, we know your old website didn't have SEO, so we know you're going to need SEO stuff.
Okay. You know, yes. Yeah.
So we're going to treat that as it's probably going to happen. You know, obviously there's the inline SEO stuff that you just natively build, like making sure you've got all your H1 tags and paragraph tags and all that mm-hmm. stuff and metadata built out. But the offsite SEO stuff, you know, that may come as a recommendation when we're in the middle of the project because we realize that, you know, going forward, that's going to help you more than, you know, something else. So yes. we may make adjustments when it comes to implementation.
Yeah, yeah, on that side. So if your question is more around the things that they won't know they need
yeah.
from that perspective, absolutely. Yes. So our contract, although we tried to have it, the scope of work, like pretty targeted. So there's not like a lot mm-hmm. of surprises, but we understand and we make sure that the client understands. Like no way could we understand everything that's going to happen during the life cycle of this project and these other things that are going to be great opportunities or things that we just... you or we did not realize would be so impactful. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it just becomes a simple conversation, a change request that will just tack that work on or that we will mm-hmm. like tackle that maybe in a separate phase. And I should even say that the web projects then go through a whole nother rediscovery, right? So yeah, there's because some of them get so complex. If you're talking about like a 40-page site, even removing the whole like back end development portions of that, but like content strategy and the information architecture and all that, there's a discovery phase. So you can see how many tracks are running at the same time now, even as I'm trying to explain it to you, there's a lot of tracks. So you've got visual identity running from a brand identity perspective. You've got communications work running. You're starting to realize you're getting closer to the web portion of the project. So now you need to start another track, which is that content strategy, low fidelity wireframing. All that work is happening kind of offset, but in line with those other portions of the project. And then ultimately, strategy is ending. Visual identity is ending. Communications work is ending. These other ones are still continuing. Now you're getting into like the web design is now picking up on the backside of the low fidelity wire. You've got all these tracks flowing. And we are discovering things along the way, to your point, for sure.
Okay. That's what I was curious about. Because, I mean, I've talked to people who they're very rigid in their structure of how they approach things. And, you know, like if we didn't talk about it in this thing, we're not going to do it.
Yeah. You know, so we're not going to. People should be careful there. And again, I'll just speak to the customer experience client side, because that's so important to us. We feel as if at this point, good design, creative thinking, good writing, these things are becoming more table stakes, and they should be table stakes. That's not to say everybody will be fantastic at them all, but the good people will be really good at them. So we can no longer just separate on that alone, because we'll hit a ceiling. So how do we separate then? It has to be the customer experience. It has to be, wow, you're really good at that. And you're fantastic to work with for every reason that goes into that bucket. And there's a lot of them. What you're speaking to is one of those areas, right? Like, are we going to be so rigid that it feels like a hand slap if somebody asks for something that's outside of scope? Or are we just going to say, that's a fantastic conversation. Let's have that conversation. Does it need a change request? Is it really important? Can we swap something else out? There's a way to protect your business, if you will, which is like everybody can't just be asking for everything and changing things all the time. There's a way to protect against that while still being human and having conversations. So I would say that we fall comfortably in the middle, which is we're fluid, but we're not like detrimental to ourselves or the project in being fluid and agile.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because we're working with a client now that does private jet stuff, and you know, they came to us with a request that was not in the scope. It wasn't anything we thought of. They bought a new van for their maintenance thing, and they need a vehicle wrap for it. And it was like right in the middle of it, and they're wanting to rush this through. And, you know, I don't need a strategy for a vehicle wrap, especially for what they needed, because, you know, they had a set budget. It was like, okay, we slapped the logo and the phone number and a website on the sides back in front of the van. So it was one of those that at my previous company that I worked for, we would have pushed it off and said, no, not until this wraps up. We're not going to touch that. I was like, no, we can work on that simultaneously. It's, you know, yeah, we'll have to adjust the scope a little here and there. And, you know, not even really so much the scope, but like timelines of things. It's like, yeah, this is going to push this by a couple days. And we just, you know, we went with the flow and just communicated that with them of, yeah, absolutely, we can do that. That's no problem. Just to let you know, it's going to take me a day to work on mockups and all that stuff. So it's going to push this back by a day. And I know we said we'd get this to you by Thursday, but it'll end up being Friday instead. You know, and it was just being flexible enough to understand this is something they need. You know, there is a value to it. While it was not thought of in strategy, and there's not a lot of strategy that needs to go into it, it is still something that is an important piece of their puzzle. Hey Feasters, are you looking to start a new side project, like adding people's pets to Baroque portraits, or designing 70s punk-themed craft beer cans? You're going to need a new domain, right? If you're going to register the domain BaroqueCats.art or BuzzcocksandBrews.com, Hover wants to help you make your weird little dream a reality. With Hover, you can register a domain name for your design portfolio. Hover has over 300 domain name extensions to choose from when building your brand online. No matter what the area of creative space you're in, there's a domain name waiting for it. From .design, .art, to .ink, .photo, and so much more. You'll find excellent technical support available to answer any questions you may have. Hover's easy-to-use UI makes it easier for you to buy a domain and get the email service to go with it. Plus, they have over 300 domain name extensions, so you can choose the right extension for your next project. Hover knows you have incredible ideas waiting to come to life, and you need Rococo Raccoons Eat.pizza to make a name for yourself. Grab this domain and many more over at hover.com/feastingondesign for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Make a name for yourself with Hover. I'm a huge fan of Design Cuts. It's an exceptional marketplace with highly curated, top-quality products and a wonderfully engaged community of creative people. They are constantly running incredible specials on bundle packs of design assets and fonts for up to 99% off the regular price. Their products are some of the best out there, and their customer service is top-notch. If you head over to feastingondesign.com/designcuts, you can check out their latest bundle pack at an exceptional discount and help support the podcast. If you haven't tried Webflow yet, when building a website, what are you waiting for? Webflow is a great no-code alternative to WordPress. You get so much more control over the design of the site compared to your traditional templated no-code sites like Squarespace or Wix. Give it a shot on your next site. Visit feastingondesign.com/webflow to sign up for your free trial today.
Yeah, I think the hardest part is always knowing when to draw the line. If there's anything that I've realized and learned repeatedly over 10 years of growing Focus Lab and a team of 20 and all types of different kind of varying size of clients, like the answer to that question kind of varies all the time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's never really black and white. So for some client, it might be we're setting a really bad precedent by maybe allowing them to get some of that stuff in, even if we know in our mind it's really easy, just because it's like, well, if that's okay, then the next is okay, the next is okay. But now we're starting to jeopardize the larger project. And again, like the way you solve for that is just getting back to a conversation. It doesn't mean they can or cannot ask. It just means we need to identify, okay, there's an ask. This is the ripple effects of the ask. Let's just talk with them. Hey, here's what you're asking. Is it important enough for you now to just maybe remove something else? Can it wait till the end of the project? Can we just create a change request and we just tack it onto the back of the project? Like, we're always willing to talk about it, but we have to be very careful now with, you know, let's just say 10 projects running at the same time of different degrees with different team members on them that have a different degree of conversation on how they might handle that conversation. You know, it starts to get, there's a lot of nuances in there. And I think maybe unfortunately what happens is we're only 20 people. I can't imagine a scale of 100 or more having to solve for that issue that is not black and white. It might be actually just be that they have to make it black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it just becomes too painful to address. Very easy in a smaller instance to go like, oh yeah, I got that. I got you. No problem. Yeah. I know how it will affect me, but a bigger organization, that's really challenging.
Well, yeah. And a bigger organization or a bigger scale project, you know, it's, you can't be working on this overall brand identity that's, you know, got the logo, the voice, the website and all that stuff. And then suddenly they throw an app in there and you can't just be like,
well, sure, we'll do that.
Yeah, sure, we can get to that. No, it's like, yeah, let's put a push pin in that. Let's wrap this stuff up. And we can certainly, you know, have our strategy team start talking strategically about the app of what it needs to be used for and things like that and build out. And then once we wrap this stuff up, we can dive into that more, you know, like that I see. But, you know, little tiny car wrap is not in the grand scheme of things isn't going to break it. So, yeah, I think, again, it comes back to communication.
That's,
you know, our job is not only to communicate for our clients, it's to communicate with our clients. And I think that's where there's a lot of failing on people who went to school because they want to be a designer. And it's like, yeah, but you can't just design. I mean, you could go to school to be an engineer. You've still got to, every position in the world, you've got to communicate in some form or fashion.
Yeah, we're
whether you're a garbage man or a surgeon.
Yeah. If there are designers, design students, designers younger in their, I'm saying designers, let's open that up to like any creative professional. If there's a main takeaway in this podcast, if there's an area you could scrub to that will add the most value to your career, it's going to be these 2 minutes. I would argue that the most important skill is going to be that skill that you're talking about. It's communication. Mm-hmm. It's that soft skill. When we're hiring at Focus Lab, we want to talk about table stakes again. You start to talk about design, you know, and somebody's portfolio and all that. It is important, but that's just kind of that first bar. Like, it needs to be good. Okay. So that's not like the thing that separates you. That's the thing that's like,
that's a given.
Okay. There's like step one, portfolio is good. The separator, where you start to break out from the crowd, is the communication point. It is the people skills. It is the soft skills. You can see and feel those things in the interview process. Do they have a knack for just people factor, or do they seem like, you know, all the other things where you can start to see red flags maybe on the people factor? And that's not to say that they're bad, but there might still be a gap there in their soft skills.
Sure. Absolutely.
That is so important to the hiring process. So if I'm speaking with anybody up and coming now and they're saying like, you know, what should I work on? I'm rarely saying like, put more white space in your design and, you know, make sure you have more contrast in your color ratios. Like, yeah, we can get there, but it's the people factor. If you've got that, man, you are really ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't know that they can work on.
Good.
Like, I think good people one. Think that that is something that just you either have it or you don't have it. And I know, at least for me, it's something I've got to work on every day. It's like, by nature, I'm an introvert, and, you know, I'm the guy who, in the middle of a meeting where there's 50 people in the meeting, I'm the guy in the corner being quiet and absorbing everything. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily speaking up. And I had to learn to, you know, work on those soft skills and communicate in that. And, you know, the same came for me with like critiques and stuff. When, you know, early on in design school, it was when I'd get critiqued on stuff, I would start to take it personally.
That's really tough.
And I was like, you know, and there were some people out there who were really bad about giving critiques. I will give them that. So you can't not take it personally. And we've all experienced those, I think.
Yeah.
But you've got to learn that the especially when it comes to critique and stuff like that, nobody's trying to hurt your feelings. They're just trying to make the work better, and they're trying to do the best job for the client. And, you know, it's not that we don't like what you did. It just might not be fitting for what the client is, or we see a way that it can be improved to more line up with that. And, you know, those soft skills are not just speaking skills. They're also listening skills.
Sure. Yeah. Great point. Yeah. I mean, that's where humility comes in. Like, you just have to be humble. You have to be willing to hear those things, separate yourself from it. And kind of like work through it. There's just almost nothing more important in our world, because every single week you're putting yourself out there and you're saying, I worked really hard and I made this thing. Do you like it? Right. It's not the question you write in the message, but it is essentially what's happening. You're putting yourself out there.
It's the unwritten subtext of everything.
Week after week. And if you aren't prepared to play that game, this is going to be a really rough game for you. And that is challenging for a lot of people. And for some people, it's not challenging at all. And that's another leg up they have. If you can do that, wow, that takes one whole thing off the table. That is something that's like really hard to work through and really beats you up. If that's out of the picture, then you really can work on those other things that maybe you need to work on.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those... It's a learned skill too. It's not, I mean, there are people who just come by it naturally. Like, my brother is just, He is naturally gifted at making friends and making everybody like him, and you know, can adapt to any sort of situation. I don't come by that naturally. Like I have to work at it, but I'm smart enough to realize that I have to work at it. Mm. And I think early on in my career, you know, that's probably something that held me back, is at first I wasn't smart enough to realize that that was something I need to work on. I thought, you know, my design skills can just speak for themselves.
I'm the best.
No, not if you're an asshole.
Yeah. Self-awareness is another huge one for me.
Yeah.
Just in people in general. It's almost, and I say this often, like, I don't even mind if someone's maybe blunt with me, mm-hmm. really rude to me, and I'm getting outside of focus on it. I'm just talking about like in general, in life, in and around me.
Sure.
As long as they are self-aware, not that they need to apologize, but it just makes a difference to say like, I'm going to say something right now and it's probably going to piss you off, but I feel like I need to say it. Right. So they're at least they're self-aware yeah. of kind of like what's coming out and what's coming across, as opposed to just someone that walks around blind to how they affect everybody else and do those things. It's like, I almost hold that yeah. person to accountable, to say like, no, that's wrong. But when they're self-aware, it's like, at least, you know, you're that person. I give you a little bit of a pass.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to walk around and not be self-aware when you're five, right. When you're 40, when you're 45, not so much.
Not so much. It's not really going to work both with inside an organization or just in life in general.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, all of these things that we're talking about, and we kind of got off track from branding into this. But when you're having to communicate it back, you've got to find a way to communicate with the clients to have their, a lot of times have their soft skills improve as well. And I don't mean that as like the individual client that you're working with on the project. I mean, from the organization as a whole, of what their strategic voice is we've got to find a way where it becomes approachable and it becomes understandable for not only the expert of your client, you know, who is knows the ins and outs, but also is approachable and understandable to the layperson who's going to find their work and mm-hmm. going to try to come to them. So it's, you know, again, it comes back to our job is communications.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you nailed that when you said that earlier. It basically yeah. is that.
So, you know, when you guys kind of getting back on track, when you guys are working on things and you come up across these sticking points that could derail you and derail the conversation or derail the project, how do you guys approach it?
Yeah. So an example of derailing the project in your mind is what? Just a simple just one throw, to make sure I'm answering correctly, you know?
So like the example that I gave earlier where, you know, you're in the middle of doing all this stuff and they suddenly decide they need an app, you know, on top of all the other things, it's like, that's a big conversation that needs to be had. That's not just a, sure, we can throw that into the mix sort of thing.
Yeah.
How do you guys approach that?
I'll beat a dead horse, but it's, you just have to lean into that situation. So we have a core value at Focus Lab, which is lead with courage. Mm-hmm. And part of that core value is meant to address some of what you're speaking about, which is, okay, client has asked for a thing, or maybe client's getting a little bit squirrely. We need to talk with them. That takes courage, right? Not everybody is excited or pumped up to just go in and have what might feel like a challenging conversation to them. But we have to lean into those moments as they happen, have a conversation, lead with courage. So we basically, we want action in the nicest mm-hmm. sense of the word. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. We have on top of that, and this is going to capture all of those types of instances in one bigger bucket. we have an acronym at Focus Lab that we use, and it's called SAUCE, S-A-U-C-E. Okay. And that stands for Seek to Achieve Unforgettable Customer Experiences. And that alone right there, anything that comes up, it's like, that's a SAUCE moment. Lean into that. Let's look for an unforgettable customer experience. That comes in both of the form of, hey, customer, partner, you're awesome. This project is awesome. We're doing great. High five. All the love. And the form of, hey, there's an issue within this project. Hey, we seem to be off track here for these reasons. Hey, you're asking for these other things that are out of scope and we need to talk about them. Those also are opportunities to create an unforgettable customer experience. And coming full circle for the 90th time in this thread here is just about communication. And that's why we need to hire people that are willing, able, and maybe like excited about those types of conversations. If our team members can't have even some of those most simple conversations, it just makes our world so much harder. And that's why it's not just about design. That's why it's not just about writing. We're not working in a vacuum and we're just like sending things out. We're working with people. So that people factor has to be there. So when I look at it, I'm like, we just talk to them about it. Like, how do you solve for that? You just start up a conversation. You say, hey, this is our perspective on that thing. How do you feel about that? You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. You don't have to come in with all the answers. You just got to start a conversation.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's somewhere, excuse me. I think that's somewhere where a lot of times in my head, I get stuck on things is I start playing three-dimensional chess with myself when the client is just looking for a simple game of checkers.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I start overthinking it before the client has even, you know, thought of that stuff. So there becomes those sticking points.
I think that is a valuable point to kind of even like bust into a little bit. It is so easy for us to see client feedback in a Basecamp message. And I say we, this is everybody listening, me, you.
Yeah.
It is so easy for all of us to see a Basecamp message come through and read it in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
There's so easy for us to see a request come through for a new edition and read it a certain way. And it isn't until we actually talk to the person, they're like, oh, I was just throwing it out there as a simple idea. If, you know, if we can't do it, no problem. But maybe for the seven hours that we sat with that, we were like, oh my God, they want this other thing. And it's going to like derail half the project. And how could they ask for that? And it's like, don't go there yet. Step one is, let me get with you. Let me make sure I understand exactly what you're asking for is correct. Or this feedback. Oh, now that I talk with you, oh, it's actually maybe not as critical as I thought it was. It's how I read it in my own mind because I was nervous about the feedback. I think we would save ourselves a lot of time if we would try to remove those types of things from our life and just say like, I'll just wait till I have the conversation to form my final opinion. Here's a quote. Yeah. I don't remember where I saw this, but it's really helpful for me. And it said something to the effect of, if you're going to assume the worst, you have to also assume the best. Both are in play. It's not just assume the worst. It's not a just getting to zero game. It's like you're on the 50-yard line and it goes one way or the other. So if you're going to assume, oh my God, this is going to be terrible, also assume this could be great. And again, wait until you have the conversation to form your final opinion.
Yeah. I think that's very true. And I think that's also one of those when you're responding to clients is, you know, try to be as precise in your wording as possible to not leave them in that same position where they're thinking, oh God, you know, seven steps ahead. I know. And it's, you know, there is a bit of inevitability in that because no matter what we read, we're going to read it with the tone that's in our head, not the tone that was in the writer's head.
Yeah.
So if you can write something that removes as much of that questioning as possible, you know, you've set yourself up to be in a better position. I know one of the things that my wife and I do, because my wife's my business partner, is I tend to be very blunt in the way that I write emails. Like, it's just very straight to the point. And I've just gotten to this point now where, you know, if I'm writing anything longer than like two sentences, or even if it's a two sentence email that is very critical, I'm like, hey, can you read this before I hit send? I just want to make sure that I don't sound like I'm being a jerk here. Or there's not that room for interpretation of, well, why the hell is he asking that? We've already talked about this.
Yeah, you know what I do, and I try to preach this into the team too, is this, and maybe this is my own solution and it doesn't work for everybody, but I'm a big believer in just put it out there. Like, preface the statement. Hey, I'm going to get straight to the point on this thing. Don't read it any other way. And say the statement. Like, take it off of the table if you have the ability to take. Like, if you already know they're probably going to think that way, just remove it for them. Mm-hmm. It's like being extra transparent. I'm a big believer in that in both email form, even in a meeting. Hey, guys, I really have a strong opinion on this. I'm going to lay it out there. It's going to sound like I'm actually frustrated. I'm not. I just want to get to the point and I'm going to say this thing. That makes such a difference in that setting right there, as opposed to, oh God, I'm really like, I just want to get to the point of this thing. I'm just going to say this thing, throw it out there and let everybody try to figure out.
See everybody scramble to go wise.
Why even do that? Like, just remove that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. When you are dealing with clients and you're not necessarily able to remove yourself from that situation, how do you adjust and how do you ask questions to alleviate any tensions you may have in your mind?
Again, just to make sure I'm clear, what's an example?
Oh, yeah, I can't think of a good example on that one, but just a general, when you feel like you may be approaching things too bluntly, and it's more of a general feeling. I don't have a good example of it, but we've all been in the room where you can see that switch in the client's eyes where they've shut down in that conversation and they're not willing to move forward. You know, how do you work through that? I don't want to say backtrack because I hate having to.
So I think this is, I think what I'm going to say is my approach, and it also fits my personality style. I don't think this is a silver bullet that everyone can just like lock it in and that's the one that they're going to use. It is seemingly easy for me to just really open up and become super vulnerable and very human in the moment. Just to say like, all right, it seems like this meeting has taken a turn. I feel like maybe you guys are not communicating what you feel like you need to communicate. Let's all be complete open books here. No feelings are going to get hurt. Let's really get to the crux of what's going on. Do you guys feel like we're listening to you well? Is it bothering you when we're pushing back on these other things? Like, what's actually at play here? That is my go-to, but it also feels very comfortable for me to do that.
Sure.
And I think that feels comfortable to me because now I've been doing it for 10 years and I realize that is the fastest path back to happiness for everybody. Rip the Band-Aid off and let's talk. It doesn't mean we need to fight. We're sitting on the both sides of the same table. But we're obviously not saying some things that need to be said. I'm not suggesting that needs to happen in the moment in that meeting. There might be a larger group of people there where you're like, oh, this could be like really hairy for everybody. So what happens is that's just a sidebar conversation. So that's you leave the meeting and you're like, something ain't right. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's a little bit of a something in here. There's like a tension that's existing. So that could either be me having a conversation with some leader on their side. That could be the PM having a one-on-one conversation with whoever their point person is. Wherever that tension exists, you just really want to address it. And the best way to address it is sit down and talk about it. It's just the only way. Like, how else do you address that? No long email. is really going to address it. I think maybe if you want to use that as the stepping stone into the conversation, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you just really got to dig into it. We don't have to have, I'm happy to say, we don't have to have a ton of those types of conversations, because we're usually trying to, you want to knock down the little hills before you get to the giant mountain where you're like, oh my God, if this thing has really grown into a thing. So any little thing, we're like, hey, let's talk about this thing. Hey, let's talk about this thing. But when they're there, you got to dive in. That's a lead with courage moment, right? I would be telling our team, like, we got to lead with courage with this thing. We just got to go be honest and open with them.
Yeah. I want to switch gears a little bit because we're getting close to our time, and I want to ask, you know, when you guys get close to wrapping up these projects that, you know, have all these multiple components and you're looking at communicating what the next steps are and providing that, that sauce moment for your clients, how do you as a team identify those things?
How do we identify if sauce was achieved, or how do we maintain like a great customer experience?
Or if there is the opportunity for, really more the opportunity for it.
Yeah. So I guess the way that I'm going to answer this is going to sound like we built on a service to create more revenue, but it's not that. Okay. There's my preface. We talked about prefacing. There's my preface. So one area that we identified that we could deliver more sauce was to have this relationship that went beyond the main project. It was clear to us that we had this weird ending point. But it wasn't like bad weird. It was just kind of unnatural. Huge project, huge lift. And then both parties go separate ways, but they still need stuff. We're then transitioning onto new projects. So we needed to fix that thing. Because what happens is the client's left now going to find a freelancer, or their internal team has to now do all this work, but they're too busy to do all the new work.
Sure.
The way that we try to put the analogy out there is kind of like, we built you a Ferrari, we gave it to you, but you cannot drive stick shift. But what we built you is a stick shift in a way, right? So you're like fumbling around for a while, grinding your gears. So in a way that we deliver sauce now is we say, hey, we're going to stay on with you at a price that, you know, I don't want to get down into price specifics because it's not about that, but it is basically a no-brainer for you. And that is to prove that like this is no longer about driving revenue. This is a, we want to deliver a service to you. Stay on with us and we're going to help you for the next 6 months do all these things that are more rooted and tangible to what your business needs like tomorrow, as opposed to the big picture brand stuff that we just gave you. These are the, you can start working to the bone tomorrow and we're going to work with you. So that actually, that in my mind is a sauce positioned service where they're getting like a ton of value after the fact. How do we continue to deliver sauce after that? I mean, we certainly stay in their bubble. We're promoting, high-fiving, cheering them on as they're winning. We're trying to stay close in our relationships, the relationships that we build during a project, very much like yours, I assume. They're down to the people relationship. It's not just a business engagement for us at Focus Lab. But we only have so much control of sauce after they're not meeting with us weekly. But that service right there really does help us continue to deliver on that customer experience. Because now we're helping them with that thing we built. It's almost like if you went to, I was going to say, it's like if you went to somebody for like coaching and you had this weird cutoff where now you're put out into the wild and it's like, you got to leave the nest. You're like, I'm not really ready to leave the nest.
Yeah.
They stay on and help you. That's a much better
experience.
You give
them those baby steps to help them become self-sufficient.
Yes, exactly right.
Okay. So switching gears again, and let's talk about, speak of sauce in a literal sense. I like to wrap up each podcast with, three questions that are related to food. And it's whatever the first answer is that comes to your mind. There's no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
It can be good or bad.
Fair.
So we'll just start off with, what's your earliest food memory?
How about going to my grandmother's house and she would always have like the raspberry Danish Entenmanns, you know, like the long box with the tinfoil and you cut like, you know, whatever those are, the bars or slices out of it.
Inch thick sliver. Yeah.
talk about consistency, important in brand. My grandmother was consistent. She always had one of those at the house, literally always. There's a food memory for you.
That's a good one. So what is your go-to comfort food when you've just had just a crappy day and you just want to kind of veg out in front of the TV?
COVID has brought those out.
Yeah.
Those are in full picture, full vision right now. It's almost hard to call it a comfort food because it's kind of like my go-to food almost regardless if I'm pumped
sure.
or if I'm just dragging my butt.
It can be this, yeah.
Chinese food is my go-to. I just right. absolutely love it. Yeah. I mean, if I was second really bad, maybe comfort food would be, I'm a new Burger King fan.
A new Burger King fan?
Maybe that's a weird one. Yeah, I think McDonald's was kind of the staple for fast food for me. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, a Whopper's pretty damn great. So Whoppers are on the radar now. I'm certainly not trying to eat those every week, but.
No, I think that would kill you. And then final question, what is your deathbed meal? That last thing that you can ever eat?
Strangely enough, we actually talk about this at Focus Lab. It feels like kind of often. I don't know why. My answer usually is a giant McDonald's meal. Like a 20 or 40 piece nugget, a couple burgers, tons of fries. Yeah, I don't know why that is. I don't know that it would be like a steak or something. I think I would just veg out.
No, mine is never a steak. Mine's usually like a hamburger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as a new Burger King fan, I don't know. Maybe it's Burger King now, but the fries don't hold up. The nuggets aren't the same.
No, the fries don't hold up.
So there's an issue here. Maybe there's a business opportunity. Maybe it's been solved. I don't know.
Yeah. If Burger King can get on board with McDonald's French fries, you know, that would be dangerous.
It would be dangerous.
Cool. Well, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me this morning. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And go out and break some bread.
I will. Will do.
Thank you to Hover for sponsoring this episode of Feasting on Design. Hover knows that you have incredible ideas waiting to come to life. And you need hamburgers in the .news to make a name for yourself. Grab this domain and many more over at hover.com/feastingondesign for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Make a name for yourself with Hover. You can find out more about Bill on Twitter at Bill S. Kenny. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him and Focus Lab. I hope you like this episode of Feasting on Design. Let me know what you think. And if you like it, leave me a review over on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Feast on Design. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Or over on my website, ildisdesign.com.